Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, and so happy that you are here and sharing some time with us. We've got Alex Ben Block coming up this week for three segments, senior editor at The Hollywood Reporter. And we've also got Jeremy Kent coming your way here in just a moment. He's going to talk about the newspaper blues, not only here in the United States, but in Britain as well. And he'll bring us up to date. He is our European correspondent, and we're happy to have Alex as part of The Advertising Show. It's being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And so it's Ray and Brad here. And Brad, I have to tell you, I saw this. from a marketing standpoint, it gets the mind kind of thinking about what they're going to do with all this good stuff. But the world's oldest beer has been found in a shipwreck.
Yeah, I
think that's
that.
Pretty cool. First, there was the discovery of the dozens of bottles of 200-year-old champagne. Now, salvage divers have recovered what they believe to be the world's oldest beer, taking advertisers' notion of drinkability to another level.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Could you imagine this now? Through the effort to lift the reserve of champagne just ended, the researchers uncovered a small collection of bottled beer from the same shipwreck of the autonomous Åland Islands in the Baltic Sea. So, at the moment, they believe they're by far the world's oldest bottles. Permanent secretary is Rainier Jusslin of the island's Ministry of Education. He told CNN basically that it seems that we have not only salvaged the champagne, but also the drinkable beer. The culture in the beer is still living. Well, how would you know that? Maybe you would. Jusslin says officials had talked to a local brewer about whether the newfound beer might be able to yield its recipe after experts deciphered the brew's ingredients. Isn't that absolutely too cool? I mean, wouldn't you have to? I don't know whether I want to taste that or not. It's kind of scary. It'd probably be real expensive, though, if there was something available, right?
I don't think beer is typically ageable, although some, I guess, is, but certainly not like wine and champagne. But who knows?
No, toast to a new association. We'll use a couple of bottles here at the advertising show.
Well, I was going to say, I'd like to, sip it just to see what it tastes like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Piers Morgan is breaking his silence about his impending job with CNN to replace Larry King, saying that talks are almost finished. He's quoted as saying that he hopes to have an announcement soon, and describes a recent report saying that he is having trouble obtaining a work visa as complete fiction. It's not true that he's not having a problem in that regard. And, of course, we all know Piers Morgan from he's kind of like the angry guy on America's Got Talent.
He's just the angry guy because he was also on the Trump thing as well.
That's true.
Yeah, so he's just the angry guy, the angry Brit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unlike Jeremy. Jeremy's not angry.
Jeremy's not angry, at the moment, at least. We don't know that, but that's possible. So you're thinking of, Martha Stewart wanted to take Barbara Walters' place, or possibly even Larry King's place. But Pierce seems like a really good person to kind of jump in the seat there. Or the other question begs itself, should it just be laid to rest instead of just perpetuating the nighttime talk show? Should it have any connectivity to a Larry King type show. I mean, it's the Larry King show. What do you want? You know,
it will always be compared to him. I think they should, totally go in another direction. I don't know about you. I've seen Piers Morgan and some others sit in for Larry King. I didn't find him all that fascinating, and I know at one time they were talking about. Well, they've talked about several potential replacements, but whoever replaces Larry King will always be compared with Larry King, and that's going to be a tough row to hoe.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to take his place. Absolutely not. No, let him be who he is. Go for it.
Well, I wanted to mention that the Tribune, Michael Eisner, as we all know, former Disney executive, is almost ready to hit the finish line by announcing that he will become chairman of Tribune. And they say that this is imminent, but yet no formal announcement has been made. So I'm not sure being the chairman of Tribune is going to be all that exciting. They've had their challenges recently, but supposedly the announcement is coming soon, and Michael Eisner, who's made all the money he needs, is looking for a gig, I guess, just to keep his ego nice and massaged, I suppose.
Speaking of an announcement, don't you have something there on your desk?
I got to mention it. For those that have been listening to the show recently, you know that Audible.com is our new sponsor, and if you own an iPod or an MP3 player, then you know that that's the place you can go to download 75,000 titles to one of those devices. And Audible is offering, Ray, a free audiobook download for the Advertising Show listeners, as well as a free 14-day trial to give everyone a chance to check out their service. So, if you like what you hear on our show and you hear us featuring particular authors of books, a lot of these books are on audible.com. It's a bookstore that's online. So to get your free audiobook download and begin your free 14-day trial, just go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Just to correct myself, audiblepodcast.com/adshow, and sign up. And it's just that easy. And by the way, all of our audience, Ray, worldwide, no matter where you are, obviously you understand English or you wouldn't be listening to the Advertising Show. This is available not just for North American U.S. listeners. It's for anyone and all that go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. So that's where you go.
Go get it. And remember, it's, I wish I had Reverb here, free. The free, it's a good thing. And we're happy to have that association here, as we do with all of the folks who have over the years participated in the Advertising Show. And it goes back all the way to 2001. So there's a little history here, and it's a good history too as well. So a lot of good information, as well as our up-to-date information from our European correspondent. It is Jeremy Kent, who always puts together a great report. And this year, he's talking about newspapers and their problems. Let's listen.
Hi, and welcome to London and the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, Ireland's Sunday Tribune gets a facelift, Tesco hits the newsstand, and UBS will not rest. The first 6 months of the year hasn't been great for Ireland's best-known Sunday papers. ABC average figures show declines in circulation across the board. In response to audited figures showing a circulation fall of nearly 10%, the Sunday Tribune has had a makeover and reverted to its old tabloid format. The paper had come under pressure from the marketing spend of its rivals, including News International's Sunday Times. The Sunday Tribune is owned by Independent News and Media, which also owns Ireland's biggest circulating newspaper, the Sunday World. INM also owns the Sunday Independent, Ireland's second largest circulating newspaper, and a Sunday broadsheet. Both of those titles saw just modest falls in their circulation over the same period. Tesco's is one of the world's largest retailers and the UK leader by a long way, and it has just announced that it's going into the world of paid-for consumer magazines with the launch of three new titles this autumn. Food and Home are the first two to go on display. They'll be available across Tesco's 2,000 UK stores from September and October. Priced at the sensitive £1.99 mark, Tesco is targeting a circulation of 50,000 for each title. The third magazine will debut in December and pitch Tesco into the competitive TV listing segment. UBS, the Swiss bank that had to be bailed out with cash from the Swiss government, has stepped up its marketing as the recovery in the banking sector gathers pace, launching its first brand advertising campaign for over 2 years. Developed by publicists, the campaign runs across TV, print and online and broke first in Switzerland, followed by the Asia-Pacific region. It'll now roll out across Europe and the US. The bank's new strapline is, "We will not rest." It is instrumental in new creative work that draws upon great achievers and great achievements. In a clever twist, the TV spot features Neil Armstrong, Muhammad Ali and Steve McQueen as the first, the greatest and the coolest, all set to a Maria Callas soundtrack, which fades to the phrase, "Until you are, we will not rest." This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Thank you, Jeremy Kent, on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth and our very special guest. We always enjoy having Alex Benblock back. Alex, the award-winning entertainment industry journalist, author, commentator, and talk show host. He is the senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter, lead editor on the book George Lucas's Blockbusting, published to great acclaim back in January of this year. Alex is also a show business historian for Hollywood Today and a regular contributor, of course, to The Advertising Show. And we absolutely love having you back, Alex. Good to have you here, and thanks for spending part of your, well, as we're talking about this, we're recording this on a Labor Day, so we are laboring, aren't we?
Well, it's always a delight to be here on any day.
Good for you. That was the right answer.
Yeah, and Alex, speaking of, here we are on Labor Day, and we just finished the Emmys. Jimmy Fallon, I think, had a great review, and critics loved it. But more importantly, how were ratings?
Well, actually, the ratings were pretty solid. Remember that because it was on NBC, the show was pushed back to the end of August, which, to be honest, is not a very good time to put a TV show on if you want big ratings. Normally, historically, it's been on about the second week of September, which is a terrific time to get ratings because there's more audience available and people are more interested and there's all the new shows. People get excited about television. But because NBC has their big pro football franchise on Sundays, they said, no, we got to do this at the end of August. So for the second time, they did it. And when you measure that, the fact that they got 13.5 million viewers, which is roughly the same, maybe even a tad up from last year's telecast, that's pretty solid. And I think the overall feeling that the reviews and everything about it, you know, was that this was a pretty successful show on NBC. Unfortunately, in terms of winning awards, it was a terrible night for NBC. But in terms of getting ratings and pleasing people, it was a pretty good night.
And I understand. I remember when we had you on several months ago, there was a lot of concern as to whether NBC could pull that off earlier in the normal time period because of the NFL issue. So, you know, I guess that shows everyone that maybe the Emmys can go ahead and broadcast without having all the fall new program support. I understand there's also a lot of behind the scenes going on with the Emmys right now with regard to licensing and so forth.
Right. You know, back in 2002, the people behind the Emmys, the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, or ATES, made a deal with the four broadcast networks for 8 years to carry the Emmys on a rotating, what they call a wheel, so that each network ended up carrying it twice. This was NBC's second time, last year was CBS's second time, and so forth. The wheel has now come to an end. 60 days prior to this year's show, the four networks had an exclusive window to negotiate a new contract. That window came, and that window went, and there was no successful negotiation and barely even any talks. They did have apparently one brief meeting, and at that meeting, what the network said was, you know what, we probably want to do this again, but we don't really want to pay much more. And in fact, we're thinking maybe you should split this primetime Emmys into two shows. And there should be one where we do all the series stuff, and then one where you could do all the long-form stuff. And this was code for, as broadcasters, we really don't like having to promote HBO on our air, because yeah. HBO dominates all the long-form. The TV movie was won this year by Temple Grandin, which took a total of 7 awards, 5 on the night of the primetime Emmys. And The Pacific, arguably the most expensive miniseries in history, led all programming with 8 awards. Again, HBO, and nobody else is really in a class with them when it comes to developing or spending that kind of money or the amount of effort they put into it. You can say it's the economic model or the desire or whatever, but they just don't do it. And so I talked to the head of one of the networks, and he said to me, look, it was nauseating to me to watch about 30 or 40 minutes of that show, and it was HBO versus HBO in every category. He said, we don't care about that. We just want to talk about a celebration of television, which for us really means series and, you know, more series for the most part and a few specials. And this year, it was a comeback year for the broadcast networks, by the way. And in fact, it was a great year for a lot of first-timers. Mm-hmm. So, ABC's Mad Men repeated, In the comedy category, the new show Modern Family on ABC was the best comedy. Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory won, as did Edie Falco, who had previously won for The Sopranos, but this time won as a comedy. Aaron Paul, Bryan Cranston won again, but Keira Sedgwick was a surprise. And in the reality category, where Amazing Race had won for seven straight years, Top Chef won and broke that streak. So it was a pretty good night for broadcast. Cable got theirs in, but in terms of these negotiations, it's going to be a long road to hoe here, and it's not clear what's going to happen. And HBO, being the classy group they are, is pretty much not saying much, but they're not too happy about what's going on, and they don't want to see the show split in two, because the idea would be that the series would be on broadcast to get a big audience, and the long form on cable and get a smaller audience. And, personally, I don't think it's that great an idea. What do you guys think?
I know that's a very good point. I have a question, too, as well, if you want to answer that, Brad, as well. But what about Two and a Half Men? Did that go anywhere? I didn't see anything about that show.
They got a couple of acting nominations. They did not win anything. I'll tell you, though, Two and a Half Men in syndication is such a huge success, mm-hmm. where these guys are winning is at the bank. Everybody involved who has a profit participation, and that includes Charlie Sheen, the star, as well as Warner Brothers, who's the syndicator, are reaping a bonanza from this show. And not every show is like that. The show Earl, for instance, is actually not done very well in syndication and has not been a success, and others haven't. But Two and a Half Men is winning big in the audience ratings, but not doing too well at the Emmys.
All right, go ahead, Brad.
Well, just a brief comment, Alex. I as I was hearing you speak about the network executive and, this professional jealousy about, using network time to talk about cable, et cetera, et cetera. I think most viewers out there are not, they're sitting there going, okay, I'm over here on the network, now I'm on a cable, now I'm on an independent network. They're not thinking that. They're just watching programming. And although there could be an argument about, the market share for broadcast network versus cable, but bottom line is that it should all be about television, as you quoted the one network executive saying, and that's really what it should be all about, in my opinion.
What about Fallon?
I'm sorry, but I have to disagree a little bit, because viewers pay money to get HBO. They get a bill every month, and there's a listing there for HBO. You don't get a bill that lists CBS. You may get cable service, but it's all part of your basic package. Mm-hmm. And I think they are aware, and I think that HBO has a different mandate, as do the other pay TV channels, to get high subscriber satisfaction. I did a big article on the pay TV services not long ago, and it's very interesting to me, because what they said was all their surveys show that if I ask you, where did you see such and such a big movie, on which pay TV channel, they go, I don't know, it was on pay TV, but or it was on cable. But if you say to them, where was The Sopranos, they go, HBO. Where was Nurse Betty, they go, Showtime. Where was Spartacus? They go, oh, that was on Starz. They actually know those branded shows.
Wow.
So it's very, very important to these pay TV services, which need you to continue to pay those fees every month, that they have this original programming. They got to satisfy you with a certain amount of movies as well, but they're paying less for the movies and they're less important. So I think most subscribers, because they have to pay for it, are aware of the difference between HBO and everybody else.
Interesting take. It's let's do this, Brad. Before we get into another question here, let's take a break. We've got Alex Ben Block as our very special guest here at the Advertising Show this weekend. It's Alex is the senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter, lead editor on the book George Lucas's Blockbusting, and also a show business historian for Hollywood Today and a regular contributor here to the Advertising Show as well. With Ray and Brad back in just a moment with more, and Alex, too. We won't have them long. Advertising Show being powered by Schipul.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. And a platform called Tendency, which really cranks out an incredibly promotional opportunity for you. So check it out at Schipul.com. Back with more in just a moment. Back with more on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and Alex Ben Block, our very special guest. Late last week, there was an interesting thing with Lindsay Lohan getting out of rehab early, going somewhere. Jerry Lewis, basically, his commentary was, she's crying out for help. She's saying, help me, help me, help me. And he said, I'd slap her. And then if she didn't get it, I'd spank her. And there's a video of him talking about this. It's like, stop it already with kind of carrying her and handholding. She needs a little quick something of grown up. What do you think about that, Alex?
Well, Jerry Lewis historically has been a great entertainer, but he should keep his mouth shut, in my opinion. But that's another story. Lindsay Lohan does have big time problems, though. You know, the transition from successful child star to adult star has never been an easy one.
Right.
And historically, if you look back, very, very few people actually have made that transition and done it well. And I think Lindsay Lohan is going through that. Her personal problems clearly are a big issue here, her inability to stop drinking and driving and all that, which led to her being put into prison and so forth. She did go through rehab, and they actually let her out early because they made the case that she's not in that bad shape. Where she's in bad shape is career-wise. I mean, she's made some really poor choices, and playing the star at Deep Throat, I doubt, is going to be the one that revives her career, to tell you the truth.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, she had a big following as a child, and she was a pleasant young woman. I don't know what's going to happen to her going forward. I think, you know, in a way, she did cry out for help. She has a dysfunctional family. She has a lot of problems. She's got all the Hollywood problems, but... You know, unlike my wonderful friend Brittany Murphy, at least she's still here to tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's got a chance to come back. So Jerry's a great man. He's raised a lot of money for an important cause and his telethons and so forth. But I think what happens to Lindsay Lohan is not really about what Jerry Lewis says. It's about what she does and the choices she makes. And I think she can come back, but it's going to be very difficult because her image is tainted in the mind of the public. And whatever she does is going to be looked at under a microscope, and she needs to make better choices in her career, and she needs to stop drinking, stop partying, and get serious about her life.
Yeah. And I read about, Alex, how you spoke at Brittany Murphy's memorial service, and you're very close friends with her and her family, so you know from where you speak. Let's talk about the American Idol franchise, number one rated program on television for years now. Big changes ahead.
Well, you know, some people are saying, is it time for American Idol to jump the shark? That phrase meaning, is it time when it becomes a bad show instead of a good show?
Funzy.
You got to wonder, you know, there's a new producer who's actually the old producer coming back, Nigel Lithgow. It's now official. I know this will break your heart, but Cara DioGuardi is out. It's been rumored, but no Cara to kick around this year.
Wow.
We already knew that Simon Cowell had quit. He's off to do another show on American television. That leaves only Randy Jackson. And, of course, there's lots of rumors about who's coming in. And they've talked to everybody in the world, from Justin Timberlake to Elton John, about possibly being judges. The hot rumor is that Jennifer Lopez will officially join the show. We've heard over and over again that Aerosmith frontman Steven Tyler may be the third judge. I have no idea whether that'll be good or bad. You know, typically, in my experience, when you put actors or performers and make them into judges, they're afraid to say anything mean about anybody. That was kind of Ellen's problem, you know, who also quit recently. I think she just didn't want to be as mean as you got to be to entertain people. And we've become kind of a cynical society where The Daily Show is our idea of news, and where all this snarky stuff gets a million, jillion hits on YouTube. It's not an easy thing at all. And I think for American Idol to stay on track, because the basic format still works.
Yeah.
But what always made it spicy was that the judges, particularly Simon, told you the truth. And you don't get a lot of truth on television. And I think there's big, big bucks at stake here. The negotiations between the production company and Fox are ongoing to renew the show for future seasons. And I'm sure they'll come to some kind of thing. I can't believe Fox would let the show go. But there's all kinds of machinations from the parent company behind the scenes being bought and sold. So there's a lot of chaos here. It's a time of great change. And the show that's really dominated American television each time it's been on in January through about May, this could be the year that we see it starting to soften. Its ratings have been coming down a little bit, but it's so high on the mountain, it's still above everybody else. But will it fall off the mountain? This could be the year.
Hey, speaking of ratings, they expected maybe bigger things for Leno, and I understand that he has not exactly set the late night on fire with his comeback as well. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's true that Jay Leno's ratings are down, but he's still above Letterman and everybody else in the pack. The problem is that the overall ratings for the whole late night thing are down. A lot of people now preferring cable, or maybe they're playing video games. I don't know what they're doing, but they're not necessarily watching. And Leno has some issues, you know. Old guys like me who kind of grew up with him still like Leno. But for a lot of the younger people, he's that old guy they don't watch anymore. Unless he's got somebody on the show who attracts a younger demo, which is what advertisers are looking for, it is very challenging. But it's not just Leno who's having problems. I mean, Letterman's seen his ratings get soft. And then, of course, this fall you have the return of Conan.
What's going to happen there? Anything? Or?
Well, you know, he's named his show, cleverly, Conan. And it's coming on TNT, and they, in an advertising sense, are doing brilliantly. They're getting as much money for a 30-second spot on his show pretty much as Leno or Letterman get, which is pretty amazing when you're on cable, and the numbers are probably going to be lower. You know, I'm not the world's biggest Conan fan, so I might not be the best judge. I actually don't find the guy that funny.
Yeah.
But apparently there is a younger demo, and those people who the advertisers desire who are crazy about him, and I guess they'll follow him to cable. And all that can do is dilute the audience even more, take more people away from Leno and Letterman and Nightline, for that matter, and spread it across the dial more so that each of them gets fewer viewers. But remember, Leno may not be a 900-pound gorilla anymore, but he's still about a 700-pound gorilla. I won't underestimate him. He's a great natural wit. He's got a big franchise and a big following, and he's not going anywhere. We'll be picking on him for a number of years to come, in my opinion.
Very good.
You know, let's move from the small screen to the big screen. I understand that 2010 summer movie season will not go down as setting any records, huh, Alex?
Yeah, it's been kind of a soft summer in movie going. It depends on how you count, though. If you count dollars, it's actually going to be up a little bit, but that's mainly because of higher ticket prices, especially 3D ticket prices. But in fact, if you count from about May through Labor Day, it's projected that about 552 million people will go to a movie. And that's the lowest tally in attendance since 1997, when 540 million people turned up for about the same period. And now revenue, as I said, is going to be up. And the summer is sort of what toy retailers do at Christmas, movie theaters do in the summer. That is about 40% of the entire industry ticket sales. Happen in the summer. This summer it's going to total around $4.4 billion, maybe a 2% increase from last year, but again, higher ticket prices. But the worrisome thing here is a lot of the 3D movies, and I'm sure you guys saw Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. A lot of those 3D movies did not do as well as they hoped, and that's kind of a problem. And people aren't just saying, oh, it's 3D, I think I'll go see it. You know, it's the next Avatar. Kitty Galore was not the next Avatar. And there are a number of others. On the other hand, Toy Story 3, which also came out in 3D, is the biggest movie of the summer, by far, and the first animated movie ever to gross more than $1 billion worldwide.
Wow.
Which kind of makes it up for the fact that the Walt Disney Company, which released that movie, had a big bomb. Well, I shouldn't say a big bomb with Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. It did do $330 million worldwide, which seems like a lot of money. But on the other hand, expected a lot more from it, and it certainly didn't live up to its hype, I think you could say. Oddly, the biggest movie of the summer, outside of Toy Story, and the one I think the most interesting movie of the summer, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, I did, was Inception, which was a Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures movie, and really was the blockbuster breakout of the summer, racked up about $660 million in ticket sales. And Dan Feldman, who's the brilliant head of distribution at Warner's, he's quoted as saying, you know, everybody said to us, why would you release a movie this smart in the middle of summer? Isn't that, you know, we only release dumb movies in the summer. And Dan Feldman says, guess what? The summer isn't just for dopes. A lot of people went. And so Leonardo DiCaprio, who starred in Inception, is one of the big hits of the summer. Other stars who did well this summer included Angelina Jolie, who was in Salt, kind of a nonstop, old-fashioned spy caper. And Adam Sandler made a bit of a comeback with Grown Ups. Did okay. And Will Ferrell, who had a huge flop last year when Land of the Lost, did okay with the other guys. Among the really disappointments of summer, Nick Cage and The Sorcerer's Apprentice, once again from Disney, was dead on arrival. And Scott Pilgrim vs. the World with Michael Cera was also meant for the comic book crowd. I did see the movie. It seemed more like a video game than a movie to me. And it failed to find a mainstream audience. Among the other disappointments, Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz really kind of fizzled in Night and Day. And Charlie St. Cloud, very sweet movie starring Zac Efron, really didn't ever find an audience. So, and there was a few other hits. You know, Iron Man 2 came in second for the summer, about $312 million. And, of course, the endless Twilight saga continued with Eclipse, did about almost $300 million in the U.S. and about more than double that worldwide. Specialty films, not so much. The Kids Are All Right did about $19 million. And the summer ends with The American, released by Focus Features, which is doing okay with George Clooney. On a slow weekend, it's the number one picture. So, you know, it wasn't like the business died, but it wasn't like they really have much to celebrate either.
I'm going to take a break here in just a moment and continue our conversation with Alex Van Block here at the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Back in just a minute. Back on the Advertising Show with one of our very favorite contributors here, a regular contributor to the Advertising Show. Is also a senior editor of The Hollywood Reporter and a business historian for Hollywood Today. It is Alex Van Block. Alex, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
You know, I want to conclude asking about Michael Douglas, but I want to hold off on that and save that for the end of this segment and talk to you very briefly about the bad news at USA Today, a premier newspaper, you know, brought back the national publication, introduced color to what was previously a black and white medium.
Exactly.
And yet we have some not favorable news about their labor force on Labor Day today.
Or looking for some credibility in the future, though. Alex, go ahead.
Well, you know, this is part of a bigger trend. All the newspapers are suffering from loss of circulation and advertising. USA Today, which is the nation's second largest newspaper, recently announced not only are they laying off 130 people out of their workforce of about 1,500 employees. It's about a 9% reduction. But really, they're changing the whole way they do business in the past 28 years. And as you guys mentioned, they've been very innovative, the first real national newspaper, the use of color. Their coverage of sports continues to be outstanding. Whether you like the short stories or not, there's a lot of information presented very quickly. But now going forward, they're going to de-emphasize the print edition and ramp up their efforts to reach readers and advertisers on the Internet and over mobile devices. And I don't know if this is a good or bad idea, to tell you the truth, because it means instead of being that newspaper you hold in your hand that's so special, it's now just another website competing for your eyeballs.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also been management shakeups there. The Gannett Company has been making a lot of cutbacks in other areas as well. So this is not for people who love newspapers and I don't know that USA Today is the ultimate newspaper, but it certainly reaches a lot of people, and it serves an important purpose. I know when I'm in hotels or traveling, it's the one that I always see all over the place, even around the world. This is not good news for them or for newspapers in general. And if you don't have newspapers, it hurts your democracy, it hurts your country. So I pray that information in depth with good staffs and people actually stand by what they say, and God bless the bloggers, but I'm not talking about them. I hope that USA Today survives.
I hope they do, too. I was back with Gannett in Detroit when they owned radio stations there, and they sent us a note. They said, what do you think about a newspaper that, you know, they wanted our opinions of all the, you know, the folks at the stations and such. And USA Today also became a big part of radio show prep to the point that they would actually customize you know, the paper and have it delivered to the morning shows and such. So I hope they survive as well.
Very briefly, before we get to Michael Douglas, what is ABC settled Time Warner cable issue, or is it just temporary settlement?
Yeah, was that the ugliest thing you've ever seen? I don't know if you're one of the markets that was affected or not. Here in Los Angeles, where I live, they ran commercials asking people to drop Time Warner and switch to DirecTV or one of the other services, or just get the old rabbit ears out, although I guess now you can't get the digital rabbit ears out and watch it that way.
Yeah, really.
You know, it was really an ugly campaign, nasty piece of business. And ultimately, at the last minute, of course, they finally settled the thing. But what's really going on here is the question of who's going to pay the bills. ABC, which is owned by Disney, says we got to have more money from cable subscribers via the cable system. And if you don't give it to us, we're not giving you our programming. And at the same time, CBS, ABC, NBC, all these networks are saying, you know, we're not going to swap you for space anymore. Now we want cash as well. So there's a lot of pressure on cable. Meanwhile, cable subscribers are saying, have you seen my bill? I'm not paying more money. I'll drop you. I'll go somewhere else. I'll watch the internet. I'll go to one of these over-the-top services. Yeah. And so this is a battle that was fiercely fought, but it's far from the end. We're going to see lots more of these battles between the owners of content and the people who deliver it over price, because it's become a sensitive issue, and it's really the battle of the future.
Well, I think the world knows about Michael Douglas's recent announcement of his health challenges. What can you tell us that we don't already know as a Hollywood insider about what this means for him, Michael, as well as the movie industry, his career, etc.?
Well, I can tell you Michael Douglas is much beloved, and certainly has been one of my heroes as a producer, as an actor, and as a human being for many years. He does blame years of drinking and smoking, including his love of cigars, for causing what's said to be a lump, I guess, in the back of his throat that has proved to be cancerous and has reached stage four. His wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones, very angry about the doctors who he'd gone to repeatedly, being unable to diagnose this until it reached such a late stage that really it's not, you know, it's a very dangerous thing. Even though there's a high rate of cure, if it's caught early, this may not be early. But, you know, he's got a movie coming out. He says he's going to be there for Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, the big sequel. And really, you can call it, some people call it the AARP factor. You know, he's one of a number of older stars. Douglas is about 65 who star in movies. He's back as Gordon Gekko, and he's coming out of prison. Oliver Stone is directed again, and this is kind of the next chapter, and they have Carey Mulligan and Shia LaBeouf, who are the young people in this. And, you know, it looks like an interesting movie. The question is, now that he's doing radiation and, you know, chemotherapy, can he really promote this? How long will he be able to speak? Will he lose his voice? What's this going to mean? He's one of the great legends of Hollywood and one of the greats of the screen, and this really does threaten his career. And I give him a lot of points for going on TV and talking about it, and we're all going to share in this, and it's not a happy story.
It's kind of reminiscent of Michael Landon talking to Johnny Carson so many years ago, huh?
Yeah, and look what happened to him.
Yeah. I hate to end this conversation on that note, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of people pulling for him as well. And we always appreciate your insight, your as Brad said, your Hollywood insider aspect of what's going on, and always a pleasure to have you here, Alex.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to say, I'm on Twitter at ABBLOCK, AB Block. So if you're interested in following me on Twitter, jump on. And if you want to hear some great music, check out Haley Taylor. My daughter just dropped her new album.
Oh, really?
One Foot in Front of the Other. And I hope you guys will give it a listen and let me know what you think.
Absolutely. Thank you for the plug. That was a good one. Alex, thanks so much.
Take care now.
All right. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, back in just a moment. Thanks to Alex Ben Block. You know, we've been following Haley's career now for the past couple of years. This is actually her second CD. What Alex was saying is that she actually had an EP, or, you know, a shorter version of an album. But that's kind of cool to have a daughter that's doing stuff like that, and even cooler to have a dad to back her up. So congratulations, Haley, and go follow that. And, of course, check out Alex's blog on Twitter as well.
And by the way, Ray, let me mention the title, since he shared with us, of the new album, One Foot in Front of the Other, if you want to Google that to find Haley's music, and just, you know, thought I'd throw that in.
Let's see, we've got CBS News is having more and more and more problems, apparently, Brad. They have, four years and a reported $60 million later, Katie Couric now sits atop a news division that in many ways is unrecognizable. As the one-time home of the infamous, and the, I shouldn't say infamous, the famous Walter Cronkite, even the deep-pocketed starstruck company that lured Couric to Cronkite's vacant chair with the promises of wealth, fame, and a place in history. Well, she will have a place in history, but unfortunately, it's probably not going to be exactly the one that she wanted to be remembered as. So it'll be interesting to see as she plays out her her contract and such. This is that the, let's see, the, well, today, actually. Well, actually, a week ago today, Katie begins her fifth and quite possibly final year, according to the Daily Beast, the year of hard labor as CBS anchors of the CBS Evening News. What do you think about that?
Well, apparently Diane Sawyer's pulling it off with ABC, so it's not a, you know, it's not a female thing. It's really just, I guess, I don't know. I've sampled her news, and I find it, frankly, not as in-depth and thorough as NBC, you know, Brian Williams, as yeah. well as Diane Sawyer. It just seems to be a little more clipped and not as in-depth. And then when you compare that with the others, it's like you're not getting the whole story. And this is just my opinion. I don't feel like I'm getting the whole story. And I watched the other two, the ABC, NBC national broadcast, and it's like they focus more on the subject matter and take it a little more in-depth. And yeah. that's a reflection on the anchor, because they're also the editor, and they decide what copy gets portrayed and how news items get played out on their news. So
How true. Well, we'll see what happens as she plays out her contract as well. Next week, it's Jay Green, author of Design is How It Works. What's that? It's a brand new book, and we'll talk to Jay, and we'll see what he's got cooking in the book and some of his thought processes as you put the book together. Hope you enjoyed Alex Ben Block. We did. We always do here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyright Big Radio Midgets production.
Under pressure? Get creative concepts fast. Run a global pitch on openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 advertising and marketing creators from 125 countries. Simply take 15 minutes to fill out our online brief form and we'll take care of the rest. From world-class agencies to the best independents to the brightest freelancers, openad.net global creatives can deliver creative concepts direct to your desktop in a matter of days. Why not save time, energy, and money by quickly sourcing concepts from the world's brightest creative minds? Visit openad.net and see how we're revolutionizing the way ideas are created and traded. It's simple, it's fast, and it's global. Openad.net, the smarter way to create your advertising from the freshest creative minds on the planet. Visit openad.net today to find out more.